Jeff, would you like a quick roll call?
Please.
Good afternoon, good morning, everyone. On today's call, we have Jeff Newman, Alan Greenberg, James Bladel. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, Liz Gaster, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies for all these calls. We have Gabriel Pinheiro. And also for today, we have Paul Diaz, who will be late on the call, and Avery and Bertrand, who may not be able to join. And if that is the case, they do send their apologies. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I ask a question? You said for Gabriel, you said apologies for all of these calls. Does that mean that he'll...
Yes, apparently he did send a note through to Glenn to say that he was not able to attend these calls.
Any of these calls?
No. Correct.
But he does regularly listen to the MP3s because he sends me notes to say that he's listened to them and that he keeps in touch that way.
Okay.
I mean, that may be one of the downsides of always having the call at the same time.
Yeah, can you find...
Well, he asked for the calls on Saturdays or Sundays to suit him.
Okay.
Oh, well, so... I guess that answers my question. I guess I was going to ask if you would send a note basically saying, is it just this time or is it any time away from, I guess, doing his day job? Welcome. It's July 30th, 2009. This is a call of the PDP work team, Policy Development Process Work Team. Our attendance is quite low, but I want to thank James and Alan for showing up, on the agenda we have scheduled to talk a little bit more on stage two, which is the proposal review and voting threshold. We started discussion last week on these subjects, and actually we started with subject, I think it was number four on the list. I can't remember exactly how we got started on it, but it seemed like a good place to start, and actually got some really good discussion going. There's some notes in the fourth column of the chart that's up on Adobe right now from that call. I think last night I sent around some of my additional notes on some of the discussions of the group, and I'm not sure if that's been reflected in these notes yet.
No, not yet.
But I think we can update those. Those were from my notes that I took last week as well. With that said, Alan and James, I think we can get started talking about it. What I was hoping to do was to get into some of the, just to confirm the things that we talked about last week, because I was hoping there'd be more attendance. I'm not sure if anyone has ideas on how to get more attendance in this group.
Well, I think that comes back to a real issue of are we really working with a mandate that we can carry out? Do we need to go back to the PPSC and or the council and saying, we're typically only getting two or three members for any given call, and I'm as guilty as any. I wasn't in the last one. Do we keep on working and pretend that we're generating real consensus? I think the question needs to be asked, because otherwise, this time is, if we're just going to do it again once it goes to council or something like that, this is a futile exercise.
I tend to agree, and Jeff, if I had the experience in generating additional participation, I think that some of the groups that I was in earlier, probably, well, I would have been more successful in those. But then another question that I have would be, is the other, are the other sub-teams in the GNSO restructuring seeing this as well? Is it just a question of we're the least popular kid last year that some of the other groups are generating more attention, or are they all sort of suffering this dearth of participation?
And I think to add maybe a little bit of a different flavor to what Alan said, maybe, you know, it's okay for a small team to get together, maybe not generate consensus, but maybe people aren't responding until they see something concrete in writing as if the group's moving forward, right? Because we've had a lot of calls, and I think one thing to note is next week we're going to come out with staff has been working on for phase one or stage one. They'll come out with their initial report on that, and I think, you know, it'll contain some recommendations based on things that we've discussed, and perhaps after people see that and see that it's real, maybe it'll generate some more activity.
Yeah, I certainly think it's clear that it's always easier to get people to tear apart something and comment and something than write the original one or just brainstorm it. So I think there's some merit in trying to in waiting to see what happens at that stage and if that ends up becoming an effective process.
This is Marika. I mean, I think from a staff perspective, the survey was quite useful in, you know, trying to bring together that report because that at least gave some ideas and some, you know, suggestions that can be incorporated in a report. So maybe it's something to consider as well for this stage to do something similar and really encourage people to at least fill in that and, you know, make sure that they see as well in the report that we'll get out next week that, you know, some of the comments will be in captured there. So even if they cannot be on calls, if they at least provide their input there, we have at least something tangible that we can say, like, look, we did have 14 people participating in the survey, and they did provide input, and they did indicate their views on these different issues. So, it's at least something.
Right. But before we do the survey, I want to make sure, at least even if it's a small amount of us, that I want to make sure that we have enough basis to ask these questions, even if it's just... Even if theoretically it's just James, Allen, and I, we've at least come from three different viewpoints and can express our views and, help shape those questions.
Sure.
Absolutely, because the questions that are in there now are really me going through the list and thinking, hey, you know, what questions would I ask related to those issues? So absolutely, those questions need to be reviewed and others added because, you know, at this point it's really, you know, my ideas of, what should we ask for, you know, to get a response and then have something that we might be able to move forward with. So this definitely needs to be reviewed.
Okay. So while we have Alan on this call, I think it would be good perspective to just kind of, if I quickly reviewed what we talked about on the last call and just get Alan's thoughts on it and, you know, to confirm. It seemed like most of the people that were on last week, and we did have some more people on last week from different perspectives, to see if Alan kind of can agree with those points as well. So Alan, last week we got talking about the charter. You know, so once the council votes to initiate a working group or, you know, PDP, I guess as it's called now, the working group needs a charter. And the I'll start with the first point. The majority the pretty much unanimous on the call last week, everyone agreed that prior to constituting the working group, a charter should be drafted and approved by the council.
Okay. I have no problem with that, which is basically the process right now.
Right. And it is theoretically possible for the people drafting the charter to have that in the issues report or ask that it be voted on at the same time as the issues report with the council, or it's also possible to actually get the issues report, vote on initiating the PDP, and then have a separate vote at the next council meeting or however long it takes to get a charter done.
Okay.
The next point that we talked about is, well, what should be the threshold for voting on that charter? The council, you know, obviously the thresholds were decided on what vote it takes to initiate the PDP, but not what it would take to approve a charter. And we went back and forth basically between two proposals. One is the default rule, which is a majority of both houses, or the second thing is, do we require the same vote that it took to initiate the PDP in the first place? So if it was in scope, it would require 33% of both houses or 66% of one house. And ultimately, the group last week came to the conclusion that it should be the same threshold as to initiate the PDP. And the rationale was that we thought that requiring a majority of both houses was actually an opportunity to game the system. So, for example, if the PDP got initiated or the working group, you know, got formed because it was 66% of one house, mm-hmm. because the other house completely didn't support it, then in theory the other house could prevent the working group from ever doing anything because they could, if you required a majority of both houses, that house that never wanted the PDP in the first place could just never vote in favor of the charter. So it was like a second opportunity to block the PDP.
Okay, and the threshold for approving is two-thirds of one or?
33% of both.
Okay.
Right. So I think that's kind of why the group said, well, it doesn't make, you know, it would just basically give that second house an opportunity to block, and it was too subject to gaming.
I can support that position.
And the same thing was true. If it was out of scope, that requires 75% of one house and, oh, shoot, I put it in my email, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. That requires the, so if it's determined to not be in scope, it requires 75% of one house.
Majority of the other.
Right, and a majority of the other house.
Okay, now, there's a new question added at the end of which in scope are we talking about. Has that been determined? I'm assuming it's in within scope of ICANN and the GNSO, not within scope of the consensus policy rules.
Yeah, and I think that's, that was talked about. We actually talked, we should have filled in this part of the chart. We actually talked about that, I don't remember, it was two or three calls ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the group agreed that it was in scope within the GNSO.
Okay.
That there are certainly a number of outcomes. The rationale was there are a number of outcomes of a policy development process. Only one of those possible outcomes is the development of a consensus policy.
Correct.
But the many other possible outcomes are, you know, a best practices, a it could be instructions to ICANN, it could be advice.
Yep. That drifts into a subject which I was going to bring up because I don't think it has been discussed, but if it was at a meeting I missed, let me know. In the post-expiration domain name recovery PDP that was just approved,
mm-hmm.
in its charter, in the working group's charter, the council was prescriptive as to what kinds of outcomes were allowed. Mm-hmm. I think that is a mangling of the process, and it council is presupposing what the outcome of the PDP process will be, and restricting the types of outputs allowed.
Can you just elaborate on that? Because I'm not.
Yes, the charter specifically said that consensus policy or best practices could come out of it, and that if some other form was going to come out of it, the group would have to go back to council and get the charter modified. And I find that somewhat offensive, that the group is not being given free rein to investigate the problem and determine how to fix it.
So is that, I'm sorry, just to clarify, is that free rein by, is that what the council's instructions were or ICANN staff's?
Council instructions.
Okay. That's a little bit an issue, right? That's
well, I think it's an issue, and I think council way overstepped its, I'm not sure its rights, but the propriety in restricting the types of output that can come out of this process. I know why it happened, and it's because of a number of specific interests, but I think that's a mangling of the process. And I would, to be honest, I wouldn't have come up with this 2 months ago because it hadn't happened, but at this point I would like to see that that a charter not prescribe what kind of outcomes that are allowed.
Okay, so I think that last sentence I think is the key point. So you're basically saying that
Alan, this, Jeff, this is James, and Alan, I'm in that group. I was really party to the development of the charter,
mm-hmm.
And I think just you know, as an outsider listening to that description, is it the case that they are limiting the types of output that can yield from the work of that group, or is it a case where if it strays from certain types of outputs that they want to be back involved in the process?
Well, but they would have to approve it. And since it didn't get approved, the original charter on the table, in fact, specified the range of types of outcomes that were implied in the issues report. The revised version ended up restricting.
But I guess from I'm looking at it from the perspective of, you know, some recent groups that I was in that are just concluding, and I think that, you know, is it always, or will it always be the general case that the council doesn't want to let something go off into a certain direction without being re-involved?
I think council needs to be very careful about what the scope of the issue being looked at is. Prescribing what the solution is, I think, is potentially restricting the PDP group from developing the right answer to the problem.
Okay. And I'm not taking issue with that. I'm just saying from a group that I was recently involved in that is concluding it, I think we would have welcomed council coming back in and reining it in at some point.
Wandering scope of what it is you're looking at, I think, is something that has happened before and we have to be very careful about. I have no issue with that whatsoever.
Right. So just to summarize, you're not saying, and I guess Paul's on the call now.
Yeah, good morning, all. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay. Good morning.
David Maher joining
me. David, great. David, are you able to or in a position to get on to Adobe?
I will be in about 10 minutes.
Okay,
I'm
good.
I'm at an airport.
There was also a file I thought sent around, or maybe it's a URL that contained the same document.
Yes, that's right. But it sounds like David might be in the car or something.
Okay. No. Okay.
So just to summarize for David, and I'm not sure how long you guys have been on, but I think, Alan, what you're saying is, so what I'm hearing is that in the drafting of the charter, and we haven't really, that was another thing that we kind of talked about a little bit on the call, which we'll get to, but in the drafting of the charter, you want to make sure, Alan, that the potential outcomes are not prescribed, but that's different than saying council should have a right to...
Are not prescribed or proscribed.
Right, sorry.
Could I be in the queue on this?
Sure.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. No,
Alan said you could be in the queue, so you can.
Just to add to that, because I think this question 10 on the clarification of in scope of ICANN policy process for the GNSO, I think might already help address that issue, because if I recall the discussion on the PEDNR charter, the post-expiration domain name recovery charter, initially I think staff had put in some examples of potential outcomes that a working group could have to make sure as well that people didn't think that it could only be consensus policies that would be the outcome. And I think part of the reason or why the discussion in the council went that way, I think that some indeed had that interpretation that a PDP can only have consensus policies as an outcome, or that should be the goal. So probably, you know, by addressing that, the question 10 on, you know, what scope means, it might help as well to say, well, you know, everything is fair game in a PDP, so there's no need to restrict what a working group can, what outcomes they can produce.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting statement because, Marika, from your standpoint, you didn't see it as a restriction. When you see it as broadening the scope of what could come out of a PDP.
We actually initially had put more examples, and I think one of the examples I think that was in there was potential REA recommendations or changes to the REA, you know, noting that, of course, I would have to go through a separate process, but basically saying, well, if this group would come back and say, well, we think this issue would be solved by changing the REA, of course, a new PDP or whatever would have to be started if that would be the desired route. But I think some in the council felt that, you know, we're going too broad in giving people the options that might be the potential outcomes of a working group. And I don't think it's, you know, broadening it. I mean, I think at least from a staff perspective, there has always been the understanding that a PDP can have a variety of outcomes, which I think has happened over the past. But there did seem to be a perception in the community, or people felt that if they were participating in a working group, they felt disappointed if the end result wasn't a consensus policy or changes to a consensus policy. So we did feel that there was a need to clarify that, and I think this process might help with that.
Yeah, Marika, I think you've identified the core of the problem. It got a little bit messier than that. There were certainly some people on council at that point in time who believed the outcome could only be, of this kind of PDP, could only be consensus policy. That, yes, the new GTLDs was a PDP, but that was a different kind, and it only had advice to the board as the outcome. The issues report made it clear that a PDP could have multiple outcomes to suit the particular needs of the problem being addressed or the issue being addressed.
So let me ask a broader question. Is there even a need for the issues report or even the council to make any kind of statement of what potential outcomes could be?
There shouldn't have been in a world where everyone has the same understanding, but going into that PDP discussion, there were different understandings among different people on council. So the issues report made it reasonably clear that multiple different kinds of outcomes might be used to address the problem. Because it was clear that there were some people on council who did not agree with that and thought we were only aiming at consensus policy, when I first drafted the charter, or I and a couple of other people working on it, we explicitly put in there, echoing the issues report, that a variety of types of outcomes could come out of this.
Well, I guess I'm
that was restricted. That was modified before it was approved.
I guess what I'm asking is a little bit different. Is if you have a general statement for all PDPs, these are the potential outcomes, and non-exclusive outcomes, but these are the guidelines for any PDP.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's no need for an individual PDP, for an issues report, a charter, or anything else to specify what potential outcomes
there,
could.
There should be no need, but that doesn't restrict the council from adding the extra restrictions should they choose, which they did this time.
Well, but we can, in theory, this group could recommend.
That's why I'm having the discussion.
Right. So, and I'm not saying that that's something that this group will necessarily agree with, but in theory, it's guidance for the council to say, look, these are the recommendations for any, or these are the possible outcomes for any PDP, and to go any further to, because basically what you're telling me is that the fact that the issues report even mentioned potential outcomes in the charter was almost mentioned potential outcomes. That was like a lightning rod.
But the issues report was also laying out new ground because it wasn't clear at the beginning that this was a truth.
Right.
Council since agreed, legal counsel.
Right.
But when the discussion started, that was not intuitively obvious to everyone.
Okay. So, Marika,
if we have words that says, let's say something like any PDP may have the following types of outcomes can include, and we list a few of them, but not restricted to those, I'm happy. As long as the implication is that these words apply to all PDPs.
How does everyone else feel about that, Paul or James or David?
Yeah, it's Paul. Just to make sure, Alan, so I'm clear, when the language you're talking about, it would say things like consensus policy, best practices, something of those sorts, right?
Advice,
I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Advice to the ICANN board, yes.
Okay.
And probably there's something that will need to be added there as well for especially newcomers to the ICANN world is to, you know, create an understanding that, of course, consensus policies can only be developed on a certain number of issues as outlined in the RAA, because I think that's another thing we've come across in working groups where people don't really understand, you know, that concept, have become frustrated as well, where they say, well, but why can't we impose this on registries or registrars? And we say, well, because in the contract you have, you know, pick a fence, whatever. So I think that's another, you know, if we create any kind of, like, guidebook or manual that would outline these things, I think that's another item that would need to be explained.
It's clear consensus policy is only within certain areas allowed by the appropriate contracts. In the registry contract, that is clear. It is not nearly as clear in the RAA.
Right.
So I mean, that's a fact we have to deal with until it gets made better.
So Marika, I think that should also be in. I mean, we did spend quite a lot of time on the phase or stage one, talking about potential outcomes. And I think that's probably going to be in the stage one report, so we could just refer back to that.
I mean, I think we should use the term consensus policy in capitals and define it, you know, essentially as something that is within certain parameters described by the appropriate contract.
James, you have a comment?
I just wanted to refer back to the earlier discussion on this in the document, but it looks like you've already done that, and then about potential outcomes. And then I just wanted to possibly throw out for discussion the concept that listing potential outcomes is in and of itself a restricting activity, even if the intent is to, remind the participants of a working group that there can be other outcomes besides policy changes or new policy from a PDP that... if we set out in a broader sense or in a more generic sense to define or enumerate a list of what could come out of that in and of itself may be restricting if something unanticipated were to come up as a potential action that was not on that list.
But I agree that having a list is potentially limiting, but I think this list is relatively short. The GNSO Council only has relatively limited rights and privileges. They can recommend consensus policy to the board, which then a specific process is followed. They can make other recommendations to the board, and they can recommend best practices, which are not binding on anybody. There really aren't a lot of other types of outcomes that the GNSO Council has the ability to act on.
We actually came up with a list that is a little bit broader than that. I think we finalized that list at the.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. At the in-person session in Sydney, but there were things, Alan, on there not to rehash the old ground, but things like making recommendations to other advisory committees to take on certain studies, asking for a joint PDP, for example, with the CCNSO would be another example.
Okay. Those are asking, and they can be refused, and I have no problems with those kind of things.
Yeah. So I don't want to rehash that ground. I think we'll have that in the stage one report, and then we can rehash it at that point, you know, as comments to that.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I just wanted to raise the issue because it wasn't clear to me that we were going to be putting words in which will cover it.
Well, I think
I'm happy with what we've discussed.
Yeah, I think your point that we need to capture is that in the drafting of a charter, the charter itself should not, or the issues report, or the council instructions should not limit the potential outcomes.
No, I mean, PDPs are hard enough to do as it is. We want them to be successful. So we don't want them to wander in scope. On the other hand, we don't want to limit good outcomes. So, okay.
So if we go back to, and I see it up on the screen now, to question one, how to maintain flexibility on launching the PDP process. And the ICANN bylaws currently state that the council shall initiate the PDP as follows. There's three different, there's the issues raised by the board. I mean, these are things that we discussed different ways. The concern or question was, within which time frame should the council decide whether to initiate the PDP or not?
Okay, could I ask an overriding question? Have we come up with terminology which differentiates the process that the working group does when it's finally chartered from the overall process that started by the request by requesting an issues report? Have we come up with two names so we know which we're talking about at which time?
Well, I think what we've always talked about is the policy process versus the
But the last P in PDP is process, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if we've actually come up with good terms. We've floated a few by, but right here we're talking about after the initiation phase, and now we're talking about the formal policy development phase.
Okay, let's go on. Sorry I interrupted.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's a good question. I thought about it earlier, too. It's something we have to at some point do. But, I mean, I think initiation of the policy process is different than the development of the process, which is what we're talking about now. So right now it says that council shall meet within 15 calendar days after receipt of the issues report. All right, so I'm losing myself here because I'm trying to switch back between the two pages. So if it's initiated by the – let's separate them out. If it's initiated by the board, then the bylaws state the board has to then – I'm sorry, the council has to meet within 15 days and to decide whether to initiate the formal policy development process.
No, currently, if it's met by the board, the council has to meet and initiate the process.
Right, so we can change that for the board to basically there has to be a time frame to approve a charter, I guess, is the intermediary step. There would still be a vote on what the charter would be. Or not.
I think currently they have to vote, but they're not allowed to vote no, so I don't think it's ever happened, to be honest.
Right, I don't think it has either. But it is a possibility.
Yep.
So the way I interpret the existing bylaws, and we didn't recommend a change. We basically said that it could be initiated three ways. In what we've been talking about, though, we do need a charter for the group, and I don't think the board's going to actually draft a charter.
No, correct.
So either way, a charter needs to be approved by the council. So putting aside the issue of timeframes, let's go to the first issue. Do we use the same thresholds? I'm assuming if the board votes, well, I guess we can't necessarily assume that. I was going to say if the board actually makes a recommendation for a formal policy development process, that would in theory be in scope. But can we make that assumption?
Jeff, it's Paul. Again, since this has never happened, I think it's all hypothetical. But, I mean, I would think that there's I can't imagine the council voting against a board request for PDP, right?
Yeah, remember, in the current procedure, the council has to go through a process of decide, is it a task force or not? So there's a number of questions the council has to address right now, even if it's a fait accompli that the PDP will be initiated. I think we're taking out that option and de facto going to working groups. Is that not correct?
Yes, I mean that's what's been discussed. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it really is, as you say, an issue of approving the charter.
And so the question is, what would be the thresholds for approving the charter? Is it the same thing that we discussed the last time, or just earlier, which is, well, if it's in scope, and I'm assuming everyone pretty much should be within scope if the board's requesting it, but if it's in scope, then it would be the 33% of both houses or 66% of one house.
I think that's rational.
Jeff, I have a question.
Yes.
But how would that work then? Because even though the council doesn't need to vote on a PDP that's initiated by the board, they could then, in theory, just say, well, we're just not going to approve the charter. So, you know, we don't like the PDP and, you know, we don't want to be told by the board what to do. So we're just not adopting the charter, so there's no PDP.
Correct, and I think that may be a good check and balance.
And moreover, council could approve a PDP, which bears little resemblance to the problem the board was trying to address.
Right, but that's
current process does not go back to the board and say, sir, does this charter meet your needs?
Right, one could consider that, like I said, an appropriate check and balance and bottoms-up policymaking, since in theory, the board should not be directing the community as to what they have to decide upon, right? I mean, that...
But it would change the bylaws from what it currently... the rights the board currently has. I mean, it has a broader impact by adding, you know, the voting threshold than just saying, oh, well, we're just talking about the vote for the charter, but it would have a broader implication compared to what the bylaws currently say, no?
Yeah, that's true. But that might not be a bad thing, right?
If,
okay.
if,
if this group could decide that that's a good thing.
Well, maybe, but if you look at the case where this might likely happen, I don't think it has, is there a provision in the bylaws for the board taking emergency action? To address a stability issue or whatever.
Right, but
and one presumes that they would, in parallel with that, or immediately thereafter, request that the GNSO develop formal policy to address the issue.
Correct, but if it's again, I guess what I'm saying is that you can't really force a charter upon. I mean, you can't, on the one hand, say you're bottom up, and then on the other hand, force a charter down people's throat and say you can't even vote on it. This is your charter. This is your mandate. Go ahead. So, I hear what Marika is saying, and maybe my own personal opinion may be bleeding through this. And I apologize for that, but I'm not sure it's necessarily a bad thing to have some sort of check and balance. And the check and balance is not whether to initiate the PDP, but it's what that charter looks like. And again, it's never happened, but I mean, anybody else have comments on that? What's the alternative?
There's a couple of things. Certainly, whatever we come out with, the board has to approve them. And as we've seen, this board, in any case, does not object to saying we don't agree with what you gave us.
Right.
So we have a check and balance to some extent in the rules we're writing. But assuming we're trying to write rules which, in fact, will hold up over time and will be implementable, and we don't want to elongate the process too much, I think it is reasonable for the council. I mean, if council cannot agree on a charter, given N iterations, which they may take and go back to the board, that's an issue that has to be addressed in real time.
Right. If you can't get 66% of one house.
Now, I mean, if council approves a charter which is so different from what the board asked for that the board doesn't like it, presumably the board can take some sort of unilateral action and request a new one or something like that. I don't know if we need to write those rules.
Right.
I think it's simply within their overall mandate as being responsible for the overall direction of the organization to be able to take ultimate action.
And I'm not sure what the alternative is, right, Marika? I mean, what would be the alternative?
I'm not sure.
That's the problem. I think there. If you think about it, you can't force a working group. You can't force a charter through council and expect an effective bottom-up policy process. But James, you have a comment?
Yeah, just a comment, Jeff. That I think in the abstract we should guard against that type of top-down directive. If only because even if it's an option to begin with, it could become a requirement or an expectation at some point down the road. So to where council or even subordinate or structures after that are expecting the one above them to provide very clear guidance as opposed to making a problem and looking for definition and possible resolution. So I just wanted to make sure we don't invert that process.
I think we should go ahead and use the same rules for adoption of the charter as we would for a traditionally initiated or started PDP process, as it were, that is deemed to be within scope. If the board is asking for it, let's assume it's within scope and go from there. If we end up having a stalemate of can't actually come to an agreement on a charter, then I think council and or the board has to deal with that at that time.
Does anyone, it seems like Paul agrees with that. I agree with that. Is there anyone that does not agree with that? Okay, so obviously we talked about B, where it's the council, it's the same thing. And then can you scroll down to C, which is I would think similar to B? Whoever click on control. The document, is that Margie or is that Marika or?
And any of the three.
Do you want to go further down here?
All right, so C and, okay, B is if it's another advisory committee. Yes, I think that general rule, Alan, could apply to all three situations.
No, I would think for one initiated by council or.
Well, we're only talking about the charter, approval of the charter. The rule is, it's the same, I'm sorry, the threshold would apply to all three circumstances to approve a charter.
Which threshold? I'm sorry.
The threshold of the same thing to initiate the PDP is the same as the charter, except in the board case, there's no vote to initiate the PDP, but you're still upholding the same threshold to approve.
Okay, so we're using the same threshold for the charter as for approval of the PDP for the ones initiated by council or an advisory committee, and for the board, we're using the in-scope number.
Correct.
Okay.
You said it a lot better than I did.
I'm not sure I'd be proud of those words nevertheless, but yes, okay. That's the intent. We'll let someone else word it.
So then there's the timing, okay? So, and with timing, there's two different aspects. There is the time between which the council says that, you know, votes and there's going to be a working group to the development of a charter, to the constituting of the working group, there's timing from when the council votes to initiate the PDP, and then there needs to be work on development of charter. Do we set a time frame for how long it takes to develop the charter? And then there is a time frame by which the charter is delivered to the council, by which the council must act on that charter. So let's take the first one first, which is, should we have a time frame or a range by which after the council votes to initiate a PDP, that a charter or the board sends something to the council to initiate the PDP to when a charter must be developed?
Jeff, it's Paul.
Paul, yep.
Just a question, Marika, if you can help us. What's the current practice?
Practice or bylaw requirement?
Okay,
there's only a bylaw requirement for when the council should vote to initiate a PDP, but as far as I know, there's no time frame given for when then, you know, the charter should be done or the working group should meet for the first time.
I think the short answer to your question is, other than the 15 days by which, sometimes negotiated, by which staff creates the issues report, no other time frame is honored at this point, and some of them grow to be rather long times.
Because the challenge is, as well, 15 days, it doesn't always coincide when the next council meeting is, as they meet every 3 weeks. If an issues report is just delivered, you know, after a meeting, there's no new meeting charter convened just to respect that 15 days.
What you could say on the second, which is the second question, once the charter is delivered to the council, you could say that the council must vote it at the next meeting unless the charter is delivered after 7 days prior to a meeting. So in other words,
you first need to still look at the initiation of the PDP, no? Or are you only talking now about the board's initiated policy development process?
I'm talking about the council's already voted to initiate the PDP.
Okay, but we also need to talk about the time frame.
Right. So I'm trying to tackle the easier one first,
okay.
Which is the time frame from which charter is delivered to the council to when the council must act. And I think a general rule could be that the council must act at the next meeting unless the charter is delivered within 7 days prior to that actual meeting. That makes sense?
Well, okay. Delivered means delivered prior, at least a week prior to the meeting. So let's define delivered, and then the sentence becomes easier. So you're saying if we use that definition of delivered, the council must vote at the next meeting.
Right.
Council currently has a practice that if any constituency says I'm not prepared, it gets deferred at least one meeting, often two. Do we forbid the council from taking such action?
No, I think all. I guess the what we would say is the council must take some action, and if that's to table it for another meeting, that is an action. But I do think we should have some. So it's a good point.
I'm agreeing with you, Jeff. The problem is the real practice tends to be this often takes months. And if we put that in the bylaws or whatever the rules are, we are going to be subject to so much ridicule.
Well, I guess what if we say that they must take an action if the council decides to table it? It may only do so for one meeting, and it must act at the following meeting. I mean, you could actually have the alternatives.
You do create some difficulties because, for example, if there is discussion on the charter and changes need to be made,
yeah,
it automatically goes to a next meeting, or if they send it back to the drafting team to work more on it, and that, you know, that could in theory happen a few times if there are issues that emerge or, you know, constituents have concerns. So putting in too many restrictions might create difficulties in, you know, already knowing that it won't be respected. Because
I guess sending it back to the drafting team is a no vote. It's a no with we want to send it back.
Normally they don't vote no. They just say, well, we discussed the charter and, you know, we would like to make some changes, but normally they don't then take a vote and say no. It's just they discuss it and ask for some modifications before they consider it again.
Yeah. I guess the board, one of the guidance from the board, and then I'll let Paul speak, from the board governance report was that we have some flexibility, we actually still have time frames. So We should propose alternatives, and this group should think about alternatives, but we can't just not prescribe anything. So on that, Paul, do you have a comment?
It's more question, really. You know, I don't usually read the minutes of GNSL council meetings, but do we have any sense when a constituency rep asks or says I'm not ready to vote on this, pushes it? Is there any requirement, even amongst peers, maybe not formal, to sort of explain where they stand, in particular if it goes a second time? I can imagine the first time around, but if at a second council meeting they say, we're still not prepared, and they're bumping it, is there ever any insight into why?
I don't think it happens just that way. I don't think the same person says, I'm still not prepared. I think the situation, to the extent that this happens, and I think it has, but I can't actually document it at the moment, I think it's more the way Marika described it. That is, and when you come back to it, there's some sufficient change in the draft charter that someone feels they're not comfortable with it. But I'm not. Marika, do you actually know of cases where that's happened in the last year or so? I know it could, but I'm not sure it has.
I know that some have gone back, but I don't recall any that have, you know, gone back several times. But I can imagine, indeed, as you said, that if there are substantial changes, some might say, well, I don't think I'm comfortable voting. I would first like to, you know, pass it through my constituency to make sure that, you know, they feel okay with it. Because, I mean, you know, some charters, you know, deal with big issues and people want to make sure that they get it right and check back. But, I mean, just coming back to Jeff saying that we should put in some time, as I think the note that you may think council must take action, I think that's a reasonable one, because indeed council can then decide either to defer to the next meeting or discuss it and have changes. I mean, you do force that some action is given to it, but, you know, you leave open if that's already a decision or, you know, if more discussion is needed, they can defer it.
But then, and you need to set a limit as to just deferrals.
Well, we have had cases in the past, if I remember correctly, where after the PDP is approved, the decision was made that we now need some studies to be done before we can actually write the charter.
And that's...
And that can take a significant amount of time. Do we need to cover that?
No, but again, I think that's a no vote on initiating the no vote on the charter. And it's prescribing certain actions. The council can prescribe certain actions, but at least the council has said no. It's not just in limbo. Force the council to actually say no and get on the record as it's saying no, but saying that we'd be happy to revisit this if such and such.
So if we say something like it must take action within a certain number of meetings or certain number of weeks, and then must revisit it at each successive meeting until the charter is approved.
Yeah, that's a possibility too. Margie, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I had a comment just kind of about time frames in general. From my perspective, it might be useful to have flexibility as opposed to firm dates in the charter, like when you have to develop a charter and when the council would approve the charter, simply because, you know, particularly with respect to the registry agreements, for example, if you're trying to impose a consensus policy, the registry agreements will say something like you have to follow the procedure in the bylaws. And so, you know, that raises the question of what happens if you took longer than the 15 days or you didn't follow exactly the procedure that was outlined in the Annex A. Does that somehow make the whole PDP result suspect? So, you know, unless it's really important to have a firm date, I would suggest have it be more, you know, guidelines or you know, a goal as opposed to a firm, you know, firm requirement.
The only downside of that is if you look at history, council tends to react when a deadline has way passed. If there are no firm deadlines, then it becomes easy to continue to defer and delay a formal decision.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not saying that's a malicious intent, but I think that often tends to be what might happen.
We can go back.
I wish Avery was here.
We can go back to the board governance recommendations, but I believe they said, you know, they encouraged flexibility, but they certainly did not waver on the fact that there needs to be deadline.
Yeah.
So I don't. I mean, and maybe I'll let David as a registry speak, but you know, as a registry, where deadlines are important to us as well, and it's not always because it's a technicality that deadlines are missed. I mean, which is, Margie, almost what you kind of were insinuating, that any missed deadlines is really just technicalities and you know, just give excuses for registries and registrars to argue why a consensus policy is, you know. So I don't necessarily, I think there are two sides to that story. Is what
I agree.
Yeah, and I would say we just, you know, as we talk about deadlines, I'm not saying there should be no deadlines. We need to, you know, just keep that in mind as to which ones are the ones that are very important and which ones are ones that you know, by implication might have be, you know, open to flexibility.
Okay.
Yeah, the problem is we're at a stage on the charter approval where you can't just force a vote and say, you know, I call the vote, everyone vote yes or no. You have to actually have some words to be voting on. And that's what makes it a difficult one.
Well, so when the charter, but this is after, so after the charter is delivered, that's why I was trying to start with that easier one, as opposed to how long it takes the charter to be drafted, because that's a much harder one, as you've kind of pointed out. I mean, I think it's reasonable to say that the council must take an action at the next meeting, and that action could be to vote yes, to vote no, or to basically defer to the following meeting. But at that point, there should be reasons set for the deferral, and that there should be steps to take in order to make sure that at the next meeting it's not just deferred again.
If you can put words on that, that's fine.
So we'll try to. Is there any other thoughts as to? Because again, we don't want to give yet another chance for another delay in another gaming circumstance, right? Because let's say we set the threshold for approving the charter, right? Was the 66% of one house or the 33% of both houses? But do we game it by allowing you know, how does council vote to defer the charter, right? If the vote to defer a charter is a different threshold, then that gives another example of a way to game it. Because you could keep voting to defer it so it never gets voted on by council.
Yep.
Paul's asked a question on the Adobe. I don't know who's typing, but whoever that is, if just mute it, I guess. It says, does anyone know if Jay Scott's group has addressed any of these issues with charter crafting timeframes? Well, I have a question out to Jay Scott on some of those things, but my understanding is that they are focusing on, once the working group has been created, what actions the working group takes. So one of those is actually, as we talked about on the last call, revisiting the charter and seeing if the working group has any recommendations for changes. That they should be looking at. But anything that happens prior to the working group constituted, I don't believe is something that they are formally working on.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. That just helps. I want to make sure that we weren't reinventing wheel or potentially working across purposes with the other group.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That's why I have questions out to Jay Scott on that.
Because what we're going through is very detailed, and as we're really putting thought to this and going through each step, we want to make sure that our colleagues in the other group weren't necessarily coming to a different conclusion.
Yeah, I agree with that. And is Sophia on the call as well now?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Hi.
That's okay. So now let's talk about the second or the harder question, which actually predates the question we were talking about, which is, so once the council has approved initiating a formal policy development process and needs and wants a charter, should there be a time frame that's set by the council, or should it be deadlines as to how long it should take to craft that charter? Does anyone have any comments? Since James has a comment on that.
I do also, it's Alan.
And James and then Alan, okay. James?
Adobe. I do too. I'm trying to get on Adobe though, yeah.
Okay, so James, I don't know if you're on mute or...
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Did you have a comment on that?
Yes, I did. Sorry, I started and I thought I was on mute. A general observation relative to time frames is that sometimes some flexibility is required to schedule a queue or a docket, if you will, for the different PDPs, especially if there's overlap. And I think that, you know, chartering a group and then initiating what it's going to get constitute its members and get to work, I think it is something that we need to make sure that there's some flexibility to allow for scheduling or prioritization as opposed to setting hard and fast deadlines. So I just wanted to offer that up as an observation. I mean, the most recent example of that is, you know, by rights, I guess, the council could have flooded a couple of different working groups, the post-expiry and the second round of the IRCCB, while the fast flux was still in its kind of last phases, and I think that there's a lot of overlap in membership and allowing the flexibility so that the council can say, well, you know, we'll pace these out so that we're not releasing three in 1 week. I think it's a good thing, and we don't want to take that discretion away with time frames.
Okay, so let me ask a follow-up. Should there be an outside date? I mean, like, and when I ask that question, I'm also looking at Marika sent around a few weeks ago, sort of time frames with a couple of the groups of how long it took to develop a charter or to approve a charter. And it says for the IRTP Part A, which is the transfer group Part A, it took 70 days, and Fast Flux, it took 84 days to approve the charter.
Yeah, I think that setting an expectation is important and maybe is part of the approval process for the PDP. To initiate it, but I think that building that into this process, you know, can that not be decided on the table at the council session, or does that have to be built into this structure?
Well, could that be? I guess the other question is, could that be gamed? In other words, if there's people on the council that never wanted the PDP in the first place, could they say, could they game that in some sort of way?
Well, my concern, yeah, I'm sure I haven't played it all out in my head, Jeff. I'm sure it could be. My concern is that if I really wanted to theoretically and with malice game the system, then I would just spam the council with PDP or issues requests with overlapping or conflicting charter time frames so that I know that none of them could get done, or that I could use that as a blocking mechanism for other PDPs that I didn't want to see. So I'm thinking of it in a different context, but I'm sure you're right.
Okay, I guess I'm trying to remember who was next because I didn't write it down. Is that Alan?
It was Alan.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the question now. I think one of the problems is that there is an opportunity for gaming, number one. Number two, there is also a valid need sometimes to go and do studies and things like that before crafting the charter. And how we cover those without making it an open-ended process completely, I don't know.
Okay, Sophia? Sophia, can you hear me? I'm not sure if you're still on mute. You can hear me.
I think Sophia is disconnected.
Marika has her hand up.
Okay, Marika.
Yeah, I actually have a question, and I have to apologize because I wasn't at the last call, because we're talking now about, you know, the vote on the charter and how that potentially could be gamed if, you know, we don't put time frames. But by applying the same voting thresholds as for the initiation, don't we make it more likely for the system to be gamed, or people change their mind and creating a higher barrier for a charter to get adopted? Because I think, isn't it currently just like a simple majority that is sufficient to have a charter approved?
Actually, the simple majority actually makes it harder.
Okay.
Remember, we don't have a majority of council. We have majority of both houses.
Right. So getting back, so I'm hearing, we need to give this some more thought. I'm hearing that, you know, we don't want it to be a completely unbounded process, but we're having difficulty because we want to make sure that there is flexibility.
Yep.
So maybe it's a question to think about. You know, from looking at the two examples that are on there, it seems 70 and 84. Do we maybe say that a charter should be approved or voted on? I'm sorry, a charter should be created within 90 days. I mean, as an outside date.
Jeff, one thing maybe to point out is that, you know, those two working groups, I think, were both created at a less busy time than maybe we're currently looking at. So, I don't know, it might be interesting to see as well how long it takes for the other working group, because if you look, for example, for the post-exploration domain name recovery one, charter was not approved until day 260, following the request for an issues report. So that took way longer than those other two, which I think, you know, started at a slower time, looking at, you know, council agenda and workload.
Well, I think that should also go into the decision of whether council should vote to initiate the PDP. Right, I mean, that council needs to consider that, in my view. If they're going to vote to initiate a PDP, and they're starting the process going, if they think it's going to take too long, maybe they hold off voting on...
Well, right now they don't have an option of saying, let's wait, it's a yes or no.
Right, that's a good point.
I mean, maybe we need to give them a wait, but...
But, for example, like... I mean, if you put a fixed time on it, like, well, between the initiation of the PDP and the approval of the charter, there's less time. I mean, what took a lot of time was between the issues report and initiation, because there were questions that needed to be asked. I think it was deferred a few meetings because there were a lot of other items on the agenda that needed consideration. So
yeah, we missed two or three meetings just because the agenda ran over.
Yeah, so if you actually look between initiation of the PDP and approval of the charter, there is, you know, less different from the others.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just for your information, Sophia's back.
Hi, Sophia. Did you, sorry we lost you there. Did you have a comment on this question?
I think I lost, maybe you've talked after, but you're talking about the timeline for the working group, correct?
Well, timelines from when they decide to initiate the PDP and have a working group, how long it will be to draft the charter of that working group.
Yeah. So I think I would agree with the, I think what was said with between the first, very important at the same time to have the timeline, not necessarily within the charter, but maybe within the working discussions and make sure that's adhered to, probably would sort of work with the flexibility that the other person mentioned about. So.
Okay. Thank you. David, you have your hand up?
Yeah, it seems to me that putting arbitrary time limits on these PDP issues is futile, that in many cases they are very complex. And, I think you could say that the council should act as promptly as possible or expeditiously, but saying that it has to be done within a certain number of days just invites reasons that will have to be invented when, for some possibly very good reason, the required action is simply impossible because of voting or opposition or serious legal issues or whatever.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, two things. I tend to agree with what David has just said, but that shouldn't stop us from putting a generally or something like that in, of saying what a reasonable target is. But I need to ask a question. Right now, one of the things that can delay the process a long time is the need for additional studies. I presume, should that be done prior to approving the PDP or following approval and prior to writing the charter? I think it's happened both ways in the past. I can't be sure about that. Should we prescribe that if there is additional work to be done, because the issues report made it clear that we really don't understand the problem well enough, which stage should that be done at? We have three choices: before approving the PDP, before writing the charter, or after the actual initiation of the working group. If we are more prescriptive on saying when that work gets done, it's the problem easier for setting the time limits for the other ones.
So Marika's got her hand up. Is it on that question?
Yeah, partly related as well, like to the timeline discussion, because I was thinking about this as well, like, you know, thinking as well for how long staff would need for the issues report, and it's very difficult to put a set time on it. But I was wondering whether there would be a way of saying, like, well, you know, maximum time to, for example, that could apply as well to the adoption of a charter or development of an issues report is X date, unless the council decides with whatever kind of vote to give more time. Because that would allow, in certain cases, for example, for an issues report where you really have an issue that needs a lot of additional research or a lot of additional discussion, to allow for more time if, you know, majority of the council or majority of the houses or whatever voting thresholds will be attached to that allows for that. And same with the charter. You say, well, in principle, this is the, you know, this is the deadline we give for the charter, but the council could, you know, in certain circumstances with a vote of this, you know, amount, decide to allow for more time. So you do foresee for those exceptional circumstances, but it would need the support of majority of the council to move to a longer timeline.
So maybe you're saying set reasonable timelines and have an overriding clause saying any time and any deadline can be deferred
with a majority of a certain vote.
Yeah.
And that might, you know, give the flexibility that is required in some cases, but does give, you know, certain more stricter timelines in cases where, you know, it's non-controversial and no additional time should be needed to do certain things.
That, of course, doesn't address the issue of the charter just didn't get written.
No, but then it's a neat question. If you say, well, it should have been written, then, you know, there's some people that probably need to.
I mean, look.
I like what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think about Charternock, if there was enough interest to initiate the PDP, then those people that were pushing for the PDP or those people that voted in favor of the PDP should have the incentive to get the charter done. And if not, then, you know, well, I'm hoping that it's the reason, you know, if you give some outside date or some guideline of an outside date, that it won't be that the charter just doesn't get done. I'm hoping.
Well, presumably with a chair who's active, if a working group or a drafting team that's been charged with doing something just doesn't do their work, one takes some action.
Okay. Do you want to? Is there any other comments on the subject? So we'll document that and go on to. If we can go back to that last document.
Yep, I'll pull
that up. Go to question two, I think.
Well, in the first question, it's still as well this, you know, when should the council decide on the initiation of the PDP? Because now they have 15 days, which I don't think normally doesn't happen because it needs to defer or there's just no meeting that takes place within 15 days. So there's that question as well, and that relates to as well how much time, and I think it's another question that I've put later in the document, you know, should there be any kind of obligation or, you know, demand on the council on how they actually review and discuss the issues report? Because now there's always very little discussion. I think, you know, in general, staff presents the issues report. Sometimes there are some questions, but then normally it proceeds to a vote. There's rarely a really extensive discussion, you know, just on the issues outlined and, you know, how that maybe would, what kind of outcomes the process would have or, you know, how it would impact certain constituencies or not, or those kind of issues are, and as well the overall discussion on, you know, how many PDPs do we already have ongoing and how does it fit in with the overall priorities in the strategic plan, if I can.
Rick, I want to save that question. Until after we have, what I was thinking is save that question until after we have phase one or stage one documented, because we have different at different stages. It would be easier for people to see what's in the issues report, what the recommendations are ultimately of what's in the final issues report, to then look at a timeline and what could be taken between the delivery of an issues report and the vote from the council. I think there's overlap there, and I think we can get into a long discussion about that, but I think it might be easier for people to see what our outcome has been on stage one. Does that make sense?
I'm not really sure that I understand, but we can take that offline.
Well, I'm just saying that I think we do need to discuss those timelines, and we need to discuss all the timelines in stage one. But I think that might be an easier discussion once we actually have the written summaries and the recommendations, at least the initial one that goes out. Right, because this is stage two, which I believe is once that vote has already taken place to initiate the PDP. That's kind of the separation between stage one and stage two.
I'm just trying to remember now if we covered that in stage one, but you say we did. I'm sure we did.
I'm not sure we have. I don't think we've covered any of the timelines in stage one. Because I think in the last call we kind of talked a little bit about it and then said, well, it's probably easier to have that discussion.
It's certainly listed in the first question of this stage.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I think that's kind of where the overlap is. Getting from stage one to stage two, as opposed to... I think
in the first one we only spoke more about, you know, how long it should take to create an issues report. I don't think we, I'm just looking at the previous document, I don't think we touch anywhere like the actual vote on the initiation of a PDP.
Right, but I think what the questions you were asking, even in your statement, was, well, what if people have questions on the issues report, you know, if we prescribe a time frame from the delivery of the initial issues report, I mean, we've got to make an assumption that the issues report is actually final and there's no further questions on it.
Yeah, but the delivery of the issues report is that. I mean, if there are further questions, that's what currently happens as well. It doesn't change anything in the issues report.
Yeah, we don't have a draft issues report and then a final one issued, not formally.
Yeah, so when the issues report is done, it's done, and there might be questions, discussion, but that all goes basically in the time frame of the 15 days that the council has to vote on the initiation of a PDP or not. It doesn't normally count, at least as I've perceived it, it doesn't count as, you know, part of the development of the issues report.
But it could.
Maybe,
in other words,
maybe we need a review stage before the issues report is formalized.
I think what we did talk about is that there's a lot of times where people aren't necessarily because the staff drafts the issues report. And just because staff has come out with a issues report doesn't mean that people are happy with it, or it doesn't mean that there won't be or shouldn't be changes to it or a review period.
But I think we discussed before as well that and I think there was a sense that people felt, well, there can be, you know, factual corrections to the issues report, or, you know, if information is missing, but that discussion shouldn't turn out into, you know, this is right, this is wrong, I don't agree, that kind of debate at that stage. That's more debate that then takes place in when the PDP has been initiated, where people say, well, you know, we understand this, but we don't agree that it, you know, should be handled in this way or that way. So
the problem with that, Marika, is as we are doing things now, and I think likely to continue, the issues report and its recommendations very tightly control what goes into the PDP process, into the charter. And there's almost no way to fix a problem. I mean, if the issues report has been created well, we have no problem. If for one reason or another staff did not cover some crucial issue in it,
but that's what I mean, that I think that should be indeed, if there's something really missing, and I think that comes back that, you know, now we have very limited time and limited time to actually talk to people or get input, that indeed that kind of information, then there should be some kind of period after that you say, well, staff really missed something crucial, or, you know, they got some data wrong and here is newer data. I think I absolutely agree that there should be opportunity to revise then, saying, well, this is, you know, this is the what we got in the input, but I think we should try to avoid to go into where, you know, constituents start stating their opinions and why they think it's, you know.
Guys, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut off because this is actually a bigger subject that could take time. I think this is all related to stage one.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. So that's kind of, Marika, why I wanted to put the time frame off. that was kind of going into my rationale to put that off after we've figured out stage one. Like, we'll get a draft report on stage one with recommendations, and then figure out how to tweak that. And then my assumption was, the reason I put all this in stage two, even though the question's here, is that time frame, if we get stage one completely right, then it'll be an easier question to decide how much time between when the issues report is delivered to when the council acts.
Point taken.
Right. So on that, I mean, I don't want to go past. Let me look at the next question on number two. Maybe we can just introduce this one, because I think you know, it's call scheduled for an hour and a half, and we're almost at that point. So number question two is, consider an appeals mechanism in case the GNSL votes against initiating a PDP, especially one that's requested by an advisory committee or another supporting organization. Currently, there's no appeal mechanism built in, and the question is, should there be an appeal mechanism, and if yes, how would that work?
Just on a technicality, is there a provision for other supporting organizations initiating it? Unless we changed it, the previous rules, I don't think allowed that.
Well, so I guess the real question is, if the supporting organization or an advisory committee asks for a PDP on something, I guess they can only ask for an issues report, correct?
They can only ask for an issues report.
Yeah, so that's outlined, I think, in the current practice on an issue raised by another SO or AC.
Is there another issue in the current bylaw, though? Another SO?
No. I think that's one of the things. Now it says initiating a PDP, but I think looking at the discussion, one of the proposals could be to say that raising an issue is what they can do and not initiating the PDP, even though, you know, of course, it is the starting phase of the policy development process.
So So I guess this question actually is not even applicable then, because they can't initiate the...
No, I think it's applicable.
Yeah. It's more if the council, so SA or SORAC raises an issue, there's an issues report, then the council decides, well, we don't think we should initiate a PDP. So is there a way for the SORAC that actually raised the issue to say, well, but we do think it's important and, you know, we don't think you got it right.
Well,
and currently there's nothing
in place. Certainly, implicitly an AC can then appeal to the board.
Correct. The advisory committee is an advisory committee of the board, and they can always ask that the board take action, and the board then could mandate that there's PDP.
Hard to imagine the board doing that when the council had refused, but nevertheless, yeah. So the appeal mechanism is implicit for ACs.
And SOs.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, anyone can appeal.
Well, I mean, the normal operation is the SO, another SO, sends something directly to the board, right? Just like the GNSO sends things directly to the board, the CCNSO and the addressing reporting organization, they send things directly to the to the board as well. And their appeal mechanism is the same thing. It would be, look, board, we've asked the GNSO council to initiate this. They said no. Board, you can mandate this be done.
Yeah. I think that's implicitly covered, and we don't need to.
Anybody disagree with that?
No. In fact, that was what I was had my hand up for, so I agree.
So with that, I think this is a good place to close. The next call is actually scheduled for 2 weeks from today, because next week is actually a council call, and we didn't want to necessarily have two calls for people on the same day. So that would be the 13th of August, and then the following call would obviously be two weeks after that. On the 27th, we'll decide, because that's getting closer to the...
I'm confused. You said the next call is scheduled for...
The 13th.
That's a GNSO call.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That is the GNSO call.
Yeah, I thought that was the point. We were doing it the 6th.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm confused. Never mind. We're going to do it the 6th. Thank you.
Which is 1 week from today.
Right. And then we need to decide when the one after that will be, because the 20th, there's actually a registrar meeting in Toronto on the 20th. So we'll need to decide on the 6th whether to actually double up the GNSO Council call and this call. It's not at the same time. They're at different times.
Well, no, they overlap, though.
Do they overlap?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll need to decide on the 6th what to do about the next call, or do we wait 3 weeks, which is a long period of time.
Understood, Jeff. This is James, just thinking that if we went on next week on the 6th, then the 27th would be somewhat of a catch-up. But I know that that's a big gap in between there. But
I will not be on the call on the 27th, if there is one.
Okay, so let's table that issue, and we'll discuss it on the 6th. And then hopefully by early next week we'll have a draft report on stage one, and then we'll have filled in all these things that we've talked about on stage two.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yep.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.